Today is Monday, May 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a fiery passenger jet crashes in Moscow, killing dozens of people.
Pilots issued a distress signal to their colleagues on the ground, saying that they had some technical issues.
North Korea defiantly again starts test firing controversial missiles. Also ahead, Madonna receives an award for her support of the LGBTQ community. It's all on today's International Edition. Fiery plane crash landing. A passenger jet at Moscow's main airport Sunday. People waiting inside the terminal were able to see the emergency landing and ensuing fire. According to Russian media, the aircraft was operated by Russian airline Aeroflot and carrying 73 passengers and 5 crew members. Shortly after takeoff, the crew sent a distress signal to air traffic control saying the plane had some technical issues and required an emergency landing. Igor Sitsenyenko with VOA's Russian service joins us from Moscow. What are you hearing about what has happened?
The death toll is rising, according to Russia's media, and we hear that there is apparently the first possible cause of the crash that was voiced by a Russian official, or at least they said that it led to the plane's return to the airport. It was the lightning that hit the airplane literally minutes after it took off from the Moscow's Sheremetyevo airport. The pilots issued a distress signal to their colleagues on the ground, saying that they had some technical issues. The airplane departed Moscow airport at 6:02 p.m. local time, and 27 minutes later, it apparently landed, hitting the ground 3 times. And after it hit the ground for the 3rd time, multiple engines of the plane caught on fire. And that's what we actually saw on multiple videos that were broadcast on social media. 2 children and a flight attendant we know are among the dead. One witness said that it was a miracle, literally a miracle, that anyone escaped the jet. Apparently, it's 37 people that survived, but we also know that at least 3 of them very bad that condition in Moscow's house.
And is it storming there? Was it storming overnight that there would be lightning?
It was a pretty big storm with very strong winds in Moscow. It was windy. It was rainy. I have not seen or heard lightning or thunder, but apparently, according to some Russian officials, it was exactly the lightning that hit the airplane and it caused it to come back to the departure airport.
It would seem early to be able to really tell exactly what happened, but what do we know about Aeroflot and the type of plane this was in general?
It is very strange indeed. One of the things that we have to note here is that this particular airplane, Sukhoi Superjet 100, it had issues in the past, all kinds of technical issues, and as recently as this year, this actually the past month of April. And we also know that one Irish air carrier refused to purchase this particular type of the airplane, SSJ-100. The Irish air carrier, if I'm not mistaken, it was CityJet. It was supposed to be the only air carrier that was wanted to use this type of air jet, but then it opted for not doing so, for not buying them. There will be a very extensive investigation into what has happened.
Do you know who the maker was specifically? Was it a Boeing?
It is a renowned Russian company that produces airplanes. It's called Sukhoi, and the full name of the airplane is Sukhoi Superjet 100.
And this particular plane has had problems. This particular
Correct.
Model.
Yes, Sukhoi Superjet 100 had multiple problems in the past, as recently as this year and 2018 and the years before. So people who produce the Airjet, they were saying they were trying to fix various issues, but it looks like the issues still remain.
Now, the issues in the past, did they ever lead to anything catastrophic like this?
There were some incidents, pretty serious ones. I'm not sure if they led to some crashes of the airplane. I don't think so.
here in the U.S., if there's a crash, the Federal Aviation Administration oversees any investigation. Is it the same there? Like there's a special governmental agency that oversees these sorts of investigations? How does that work there?
We heard today that Russia's very powerful investigative committee decided to take on this issue and they opened a criminal probe into this incident. I'm sure there'll be very, very significant and very serious investigation into what has happened. I do not think that they will take this lightly, especially given the fact that there are dozens and dozens of people who died and who were injured.
Would that be like a criminal investigation into a particular person or into the company or just in general?
Usually all of the above. They will try to figure out if the pilots made any mistakes, if the technicians who were supposed to examine the airplane prior to its departure, to its flight, made any mistakes, if there was any negligence, this kind of thing.
All right, that's Igor Tikhonenko with VOA's Russian service reporting from Moscow. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Trump says the U.S. will impose higher tariffs on Chinese exports. National Security Advisor John Bolton says the U.S. is deploying carrier bombers to the Mideast in a warning to Iran. China, climate, and Russia are expected to dominate Secretary of State Pompeo's visit to Europe. And military escalation continues in northwest Syria. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. A Democratic member of the House Judiciary Committee says he's hopeful Special Counsel Robert Mueller will testify before the committee, but President Trump says he shouldn't do it. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
A tentative date has been set of May 15th, and we hope the special counsel will appear. We think the American people have a right to hear directly from him.
But on Fox News Sunday, Congressman David Cicilline conceded the Judiciary Committee has not confirmed Robert Mueller's appearance.
Until the date comes, we never have an absolute guarantee. The White House has so far indicated they would not interfere with Mr. Mueller's attempts to testify. We hope that won't change.
But President Trump doesn't sound happy about it, tweeting Sunday, Bob Mueller should not testify. No redos for Dems. The president said last week he would leave the decision to his attorney general. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Well, the Mueller report chronicled Russian efforts to help Trump win the election in 2016, but found that Trump and his campaign didn't engage in a criminal conspiracy with Moscow. Attorney General William Barr, meanwhile, is under fire from Democrats for his handling of the report's release and has said he had no problem with Mueller testifying. But with the president's latest tweets calling into question whether he will try to block Mueller's testimony. Joining us to discuss is criminal defense attorney Jack Rice. Jack, can the president actually stop Mueller from testifying before Congress?
He may be able to stop him from testifying in the short term. I think it's unlikely he's going to have any success in stopping his testimony in the long term.
Why is that?
Well, in the end, technically, right now, he works for Justice Department, part of the executive branch. Technically, the president runs the executive branch, so he has the ability to control what his people do. At the same time, we know that Bob Mueller is essentially going to be done with that job within the coming days. And so as soon as that happens, he's going to be free to speak about just about anything he chooses to speak on, so long as it's not classified.
Do you expect that Robert Mueller, if he was disturbed enough to put something down on paper and write at least one, maybe two letters to Mr. Barr, or the Attorney General, would he go so far as to contradict Barr's statements in testimony to Congress?
It'll be real interesting. I think the fact that Bob Mueller actually put down on paper his objections, that in itself says a lot. I think if you look at where we are right now, the Attorney General, first of all, releases a four-page report. That was incorrect. It was inconsistent with the report. He then puts out a press conference, which is equally inconsistent with that very same report. We look at what Bob Mueller has tried to do to correct that since then and how he has been trashed in the press by the president and others in his administration. It seems to me he might be very interested in just clarifying what his intent was, where he's going, and what his conclusions were, specifically about the issue of obstruction and why it is that he decided not to make a finding on that issue.
Mr. Barr, during his Senate testimony last week said that it's not obstruction if the president feels it's an unfair investigation. Wouldn't that sort of contradict any investigation then if the person being investigated thought it was unfair?
That is the most illogical and inappropriate analysis of a legal issue I have ever heard, truly. Because the bottom line, it's not whether the president thinks it's fair. It's also, by the way, not about whether or not there was an underlying crime or a finding of an underlying crime. The question is, did the president obstruct a legal investigation? And by the way, the investigation itself was absolutely legal. So the question is, did the president try to stop it, slow it down, move it, obstruct it? That's the question, not how the president feels about it.
You're saying it was a completely legal investigation. It sounds like the attorney general, with probably the urging of the president, is investigating the investigators or has plans to do so.
Well, that's not particularly shocking to me at this point. One thing we have learned from President Trump is that from his perspective, the best defense is a more aggressive offense. It's not about the question of what the law says. In this case, he's decided to make this fight a public affairs fight.
The Congress is talking about potentially holding the attorney general in contempt of Congress for not appearing at their hearing, the House. What would that mean? Would it really have any impact, or is it just sort of symbolic?
No, it actually might have an impact. There are various forms of contempt that Congress could actually pursue in this case. Generally, when we have seen this in the past, there's been some compromise. The real question right now is whether or not the Attorney General and the administration will compromise. What I think is particularly interesting from a political perspective right now is the longer that the president continues to fight this and talk about this, the longer this stays in the press. And that's actually something that seems to be cutting against him. But sometimes this president can't walk away from a fight. So I got a feeling this is going to continue in the press, and the fight will continue as long as everybody wants to continue fighting it. And this president doesn't really know the word stop.
The other person Congress, the House in particular, really wants to hear from is former White House counsel Don McGahn, who apparently gave a wealth of information, spent 30 hours testifying to the special counsel. President Trump is saying he's not going to allow it, that he's going to claim executive privilege. But my understanding was that if he already allowed him in the past when he was an employee to waive executive privilege and let him testify, can he now exert that?
He's going to have a very difficult time making that argument. He's already waived on that issue. Also, McGahn is not working in the executive branch anymore. As a result of both of those things, it's going to be just about impossible for the president to actually stop that. Once you waive executive privilege, it's waived. You can't all of a sudden reassert it after it's already been essentially blown. At the same time, you recognize that all of the statements that were made, potentially those could come in through Bob Mueller.
All right. Criminal defense attorney Jack Rice, thanks for explaining it all to us. The U.S. on Sunday downplayed North Korea's short-range missile launches, saying it believes there's still an opportunity to reach an agreement to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told ABC News this week that the barrage of projectiles Pyongyang launched into the waters off of its shores didn't cross over any other country.
There, at no point was there ever any international boundary crossed. That is, they landed in the water east of North Korea and didn't present a threat to the United States or to South Korea or Japan. We know that they were relatively short range. And beyond that, we know they weren't intercontinental ballistic missiles either. And beyond that, I'll leave the Department of Defense to characterize this when the further information arrives.
Well, President Donald Trump said Saturday he thinks a deal with Kim will still occur. On Twitter, Trump said Kim, quote, fully realizes the great economic potential of North Korea and will do nothing to interfere or end it. And he also knows that I am with him and does not want to break his promise to me. Deal will happen, end quote. North Korea Saturday said it tested multiple rocket launchers and tactical guided weapons. VOA Asia's Ira Melman gets the latest from Seoul correspondent Bill Gallo.
Saturday morning here in Seoul, the South Korean Defense Ministry released a statement saying that a short-range missile test had occurred in North Korea. That was significant because it would have been North Korea's first missile test in about a year and a half. However, a short time later, South Korean Defense Ministry said, hold up, whoa, we were wrong. These were just projectiles. Now, the difference between projectiles and missiles is sometimes very subtle, and it's mainly a political difference rather than a technical difference. However, everyone was sort of waiting to find out what these objects objects were that were launched. North Korean state media published pictures of what was launched, and it was a short-range ballistic missile. It is the first ballistic missile test in a year and a half from North Korea.
But why was it so important that it be a short-range as opposed to something longer?
North Korea has all types of missiles, intermediate range, long range, short range. The most provocative ones are often seen, at least by the international community, as the medium and long range ones, because of course those can reach the United States. The difference perhaps isn't appreciated so much here in Seoul, which is reachable by short range missiles. We're only about a 45 minute drive from the border with North Korea. So those short range missiles are perhaps the most dangerous ones for South Korea.
What about short versus longer range as it applies to restrictions that have been placed by both the United States and the UN against North Korea?
Well, you know, there are United Nations Security Council resolutions that ban any ballistic missile activity from North Korea. However, it's a much more politically sensitive issue for there to be medium and long-range missiles. Now, if they're just firing anti-tank missiles, sort of cruise missiles, not ballistic missiles, those are not banned. However, ballistic missile activity is banned when North Korea does it by United Nations Security Council resolutions.
Bring in what this has changed as far as relations between the United States and Kim Jong-un applies.
You know, everyone was waiting here in Seoul for Donald Trump to respond to this. He began tweeting about other things in the late at night here. And then finally, we had a tweet on North Korea, and he was very calm. He was very measured. He said he still thinks Kim Jong-un is open to a deal. He does not think that he will ruin this engagement effort. And so, you know, the big question is here, how long can Donald Trump continue to sort of act like everything's okay when North Korea seems insistent on every week or so now just ratcheting up tensions just a little bit more? How long can that game last? We don't know.
How is South Korea affected by this, and what have they had to say?
There was some confusion at first in South Korea about whether this was a missile test or whether these were just projectiles. However, what you've seen here is, I guess, a surprisingly firm response from South Korea. They said this was a violation of an inter-Korean agreement reached in September related to military issues. Both sides said they agreed to not raise tensions. However, North Korea views the ongoing U.S.-South Korean military exercises as a violation of that agreement. So South Korea does not seem happy with North Korea raising tensions the way it is.
Where do we go from here?
Nobody knows where we go from here. We just wait to see how Donald Trump responds, and we wait to see how slowly North Korea continues to ratchet this up. This is a long playbook by North Korea. They've done this kind of thing for a long time. They walk right up to the line without really violating any agreement or promise in an explicit way, but they'll just basically stick their tongue out. Well, now what are you going to do? So the question is, how does Donald Trump respond? And so far, he responded in a calm, measured way, but we don't know how long that will last.
All right. That is VOA Seoul correspondent Bill Gallo talking to VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Palestinians fired hundreds of rockets from the Gaza Strip, and Israel responded with airstrikes throughout Gaza this weekend. At least 8 Palestinians and 3 Israelis were killed. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
The warning sirens signifying incoming missiles blared all day Saturday and into Sunday. Israelis living near the Gaza border have just 15 seconds to get to a bomb shelter. One of the Israelis was killed by a direct rocket hit on his home, and another when a rocket hit a factory in the southern Israeli town of Ashkelon. Israel responded with dozens of airstrikes on Gaza, hitting both Hamas and Islamic Jihad targets. Although Israel says Islamic Jihad fired the rockets, it holds Hamas, which controls Gaza, responsible. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered extra forces to the border with Gaza in preparation for a possible ground invasion. Israeli analyst Niri Zilber told I-24 News that Netanyahu does not want a war with Hamas.
And the greater good is to avoid needless wars, a war that you get into, you don't quite know how you're going to get out of, a war that you go into, and that will most likely only reach a conclusion and bring us back to the exact point we're in at the moment.
The clashes come just a few days before Israel's Memorial Day and Independence Day, and less than 2 weeks before Israel hosts the Eurovision Song Contest in Tel Aviv. Egypt has begun efforts to mediate a ceasefire. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
South Africa's national elections next week will be dominated by the African National Congress and two main opposition parties, but there are a panoply of smaller, quirkier players on the ballot as well. VOA's Anita Powell in Johannesburg looks at a few of the upstart parties competing for a piece of the pie.
Are you a Leninite? A free market capitalist? A right winger? An outspoken lefty? A Sharia law fundamentalist? Or just a dedicated pot smoker? South Africa has a political party for you. 48 political parties are contesting this year's national election, leaving voters spoiled for choice beyond the top three, the African National Congress, the Democratic Alliance, and the Economic Freedom Fighters parties. The smaller, newer parties have wildly different aims. Some, like the African Transformation Movement, are church-based. Others are aligned with more traditional political views, or have niche issues to push in national government. But they all seem to share one thing: dissatisfaction with the political status quo. The head of the church-lined ATM party, Vuyo Zungula, says they couldn't get the change they wanted through partnership with the ruling ANC.
We believe what the people of South Africa truly need now, they need people that will genuinely serve them. So as the ATM, we're here to serve the people of South Africa, and we're here to make South Africa to be that beautiful country that was witnessed at the time when we defeated apartheid. We're that organization that will work with all sectors of society.
While it's likely the large, powerful ANC will dominate this election, analysts say the small parties play a valuable role in government. South Africa's system of proportional representation means small parties don't need a large number of votes. As few as 50,000 are all it takes to get one of 400 parliamentary seats. That may include the scrappy Dacha Party. Dacha is local slang for marijuana. The pro-legalization party missed the election registration deadline this year, so it instead joined forces with the brand new African Democratic Change Party, which is on the ballot. Professor and analyst Ivor Sarakinski says it's this diversity that makes South Africa's parliament great.
So those parties might be springboards to ask tough questions to the new parliament and the new administration after the election. If they get support, they won't necessarily get big numbers, but their presence will add some real spice to the parliament that's going to be formed shortly.
That's exactly what the tiny six-week-old Capitalist Party hopes to do. It is only fielding 10 candidates. Not enough to dictate terms on their own, but enough, their leader Kanthan Pillay believes, to play a valuable role in government.
They're all promising that government is going to create more jobs. They're all promising that they're going to cut back on government spending. And they're all promising better levels of education. We don't believe that they have the capability to deliver on any of those things, simply because they lack the expertise to do so.
The Socialist Revolutionary Workers' Party is another new entrant. Spokeswoman Phagamile Hlubi-Majola says the new party was born of frustration with the ruling ANC.
We believe that we represent the aspirations of the 23 million members of the working class of South Africa, whose aspirations have frankly been ignored by the capitalist ANC government for the last 25 years.
At the end of the day, says analyst Angelo Fick, the dominant African National Congress will retain more seats than any other party. But the varied opposition, he says, is a reflection of a healthy democracy.
And so the plethora of choices in front of the South African electorate is not for me a sign of too much too soon. It is in fact a sign of the vibrancy of the contestation around ideas. Most of those 48 parties will get nowhere near parliament, but some of them will have representation in provincial legislatures.
The Rainbow Nation votes in all of its glorious colors on May 8th. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, after a record-breaking opening weekend, Avengers Endgame continues to dominate theaters. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
This is the fight of our lives.
This is going to work, Steve.
Avengers Endgame.
I know it is.
Earned a staggering $145.8 million domestically in its second weekend, a blockbuster opening for almost any other film. Three new films did try to draw in different audiences. The Intruder was second with $11 million, followed by the rom-com Long Shot and the animated Ugly Dolls. But together, they didn't make even a quarter of what Endgame did. Meanwhile, Captain Marvel, part of the Avengers team, is at number 5.
I like this one.
I'm Ben Thomas.
At this year's GLAAD Awards, recognizing and honoring various branches of the media for their outstanding representations of the LGBTQ community, Madonna, who has long been a pioneer for gay rights, accepted the 2019 Advocate for Change Award with a rousing speech that went from playful to emotional and bringing the audience to its feet.
14 years ago, I heard about an AIDS epidemic in Malawi, a country in sub-Saharan Africa that I'd never heard of before, embarrassingly, a country that had left over 1 million children orphaned by AIDS. I decided to go there and see what I could do, and it was like history repeating itself. Hospital wards filled with emaciated, dying people laying in hallways and under beds, abandoned children wandering the streets everywhere, orphanages overflowing. No medicine, no education about what was happening, and no one talking about prevention. Eventually, I made a documentary called I Am Because We Are, wanting to share this journey and hoping to raise awareness and inspire others to help me. I started advocating for change in the warm heart of Africa, which is what Malawi is known as, building schools and orphanages and eventually a pediatric hospital. It is here that I met and adopted 4 of my 6 most beautiful children. To quote a song on my new record called Extreme Occident, life is a circle. Death and loss brought me new life, brought me to life, brought me to love. And so we are back to the beginning of my speech, the importance of love. Because as soon as you really understand what it means to love, you understand what it takes to become a human being, and that it is every human's duty to fight, to advocate, to do whatever we can and whatever it takes.
Well, a teary-eyed Madonna accepted the award from Anderson Cooper, Miki Blanco, and Rosie O'Donnell, who gave a powerful speech about how Madonna helped her become more comfortable in her own skin. Just Despite having won 7 Grammys, 2 Golden Globes, and countless other awards, Madonna said getting GLAAD's Advocate for Change Award has a special place in her heart. The 60-year-old pop icon will release her 14th album, inspired by living in Lisbon, Portugal, for the past few years. It's called Madam X, and it will be released in June. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
This is V.